Hi, Filmedics. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we have a very special show for you. We have Joshua Lustin. He is a practicing entertainment attorney representing clients in TV and film. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really excited to be here and really excited to talk about my career in entertainment law.
Yeah, we're so excited to have a lawyer on. We had David Helfand who came on, and now we're going to have Joshua, who has a lot of TV and film experience and will help a lot of our listeners to learn some things about film and TV and showbiz. But I want to let everyone to know, Joshua, where are we recording with you live today from?
You know, I am live from Los Angeles, more specifically Santa Monica, California. It's a beautiful day here in Santa Monica, California.
Yes. We finally got a little winter. It's kind of cool in middle of March here. But Joshua, I want to ask you, growing up, was there that favorite film that you had as a kid that you just loved?
Yeah, you know, so growing up as a kid, I'm actually from Iowa originally, a small town in the middle of nowhere of 500 people. And we had a stop sign and a post office and a gas station growing up. So we were about as far removed from the entertainment industry as possible. But I remember I was probably about 7 or 8 years old when the Star Wars 20th anniversary special editions were re-released in theaters, first in theaters and then in these fancy gold VHS tapes. If anyone remembers what a VHS is at this point anymore, you can look them up on Google. But, you know, for me, as a kid growing up in Iowa, the added scenes, the added bonus and the special features that started to come along with these re-releases, these VHSs, these DVDs, which would eventually come out in the late 2000s. That would be my first real sort of identification or foray into understanding that there is an actual business that goes on into Hollywood. You know, I think it just kind of is taken for granted, at least where I grew up in Iowa, that you turn on the film or you turn on the television and something just kind of magically appears. So not only was I, you know, kind of enthralled, obviously, with the story, with the lights, the sound, with everything that is Star Wars, but for me, it was really eye-opening in that it was the first time I was kind of exposed to the idea that there's, you know, people who work behind the scenes, people can make a living working in film and television, and that, you know, was very eye-opening and fundamental on my path, which started me on my career as becoming an entertainment attorney.
Josh, I'm going to have to ask you. So you were in this small town of 500 people, one gas station, one post office, did you say? One stop sign?
Yeah, just a real rural part of Iowa growing up.
Did y'all have a theater, or how far did you have to drive to go to the movie theater?
So we were about 25 minutes away from the local theater. We had a small theater in the booming metropolis. They had a small two theater Cineplex.
Okay. Yeah. You, so that's really great. So it only took you about 25 minutes to go to that local theater. Do you remember the name of it?
You know, I don't remember what it was called at the time, but now I believe it's called 4-8. I think it's grown since then. It's 4-8 theaters.
Okay, great. Well, I hope that theaters are going to be able to open back up, because they literally have gone over like a 1 year being closed.
And I do too.
In Los Angeles, I think some places like Australia heard, maybe Russia had, and even in Mexico, friends said that their restaurants were open and stuff was open. So wow, a small town, boy, that must have been a big transition to coming out to Los Angeles from a small town. So that's going to lead me to my next favorite question. So then you probably had a favorite Criterion movie. And I was wondering, which one of those is one of your favorites that probably inspired you to go into entertainment law?
Yeah, you know, I was very much into animation growing up as a kid, and it really kind of probably all started with Toy Story. It was probably one of the very first major blockbuster animated films that I saw growing up as a kid. And I think, you know, looking back, seeing now that Joss Whedon shared a screenplay credit on it, is no coincidence. Pixar really hit the scene heavy when I was just kind of becoming how do you say, a teenager, having purchasing power for myself, making choices in terms of what I want to consume as a media, and a medium. And Toy Story was just so it spoke to me as a kid, as someone who had played with toys as a kid, as someone who liked animation, who's someone who wanted to work in storytelling someday. Just the whole idea of Toy Story really spoke to me. And I think that was probably one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, and still is to this day. We watch Pixar movies all the time, and I use Pixar as kind of the litmus test or model for achievement for all entrepreneurship and startup companies, because that company's got a really cool story.
So what's your favorite toy in Toy Story? Is it Woody or is it the spaceman, Buzz Lightyear?
It's gotta probably be. I gotta go with Buzz. Buzz is kind of he's a jerk, but you gotta love him.
To infinity and beyond,
Yeah, to infinity and beyond.
Yeah. And then so I have to ask the second question. Did you have brothers and sisters, and did you play or like Star Wars with the lightsabers and stuff out in Iowa?
You know, I'll tell you a story. I do have a little brother who's about 7 years younger than me. And we obviously played with toys, and we played Star Wars and whatever. But I actually had a best friend growing up who was my age. And we were just kind of like, how do you say, we were obsessed with Star Wars. We were very into the whole Star Wars thing. And even into our high school years. We would being troublesome high school kids that we would go to Target, and we would take out those plastic lightsabers, and we would just go to town hitting each other about as hard as we could in the middle of the store aisles until we'd eventually get kicked out. Probably not the greatest story to be sharing, but yeah, many of lightsaber fights have I had, and probably got my hand smacked a few times and kicked out of a few Target stores to boot.
We had those noodles, you know, those pool noodles, pool noodle fights in
Right.
the Target stores. So, okay, which leads me to did you go to co where did you go to college? And then can you t share with us your career path to become an entertainment lawyer out here in Los Angeles?
Yeah, so I went to school at the University of Northern Iowa. It's a small state school still in Iowa. It's a beautiful school, beautiful campus. And I majored in both economics and English literature, two separate majors. And I was really all about that, right brain, analytical, economics, math, business, hardcore acclimacy mindset in half of my studies, econ, finance, econometrics, directed research, accounting. But in my English literature classes, it was much more left brain unstructured. So we would have, Geoffrey Chaucer days, and people would bring penis cookies to class or whatever. And I actually wrote my English thesis on Holocaust film and literature, the difference between the German 1950s Jacob the Liar versus the late 90s, early 2000s American version with Robin Williams. So I did a mix of both economic business and creative writing film analysis. I did my economic thesis looking at cinema box office attendance in the United States, cinema box office attendance in the United States from 1940 to 2010. And we measured that against current unemployment rates, gross domestic product, real personal disposable income, and other economic metrics to see how the cinema business does in hard economic times. So my education, even going back to undergraduate, was very focused on a career towards entertainment.
And then so you decided to become a lawyer after studying and doing these fabulous writing theses, like on the Holocaust. I mean, really beautiful and just smart and just you know, it just touched me when you were talking about that. So how did you just applied for law school? I'm assuming, did you come out here in LA or did you stay out?
Yeah. So I knew I had to be in Los Angeles. I had to get out to Hollywood if I really wanted to become, a real traditional film and television Hollywood attorney. So I applied to a bunch of different schools here in LA. I got accepted into a few and I decided to make my Pepperdine in Malibu my home. So in 2011, summer 2011, I packed everything up and I moved to Malibu.
You're like, this is the life, you know, Malibu, yeah. Law school. Wow. Was it hard to concentrate?
A little bit. There was lots of ocean scenes and lots of Malibu, California girls to be distracting. But I managed to do pretty well in law school. I managed to work consistently about 30, 40 hours a week throughout law school, doing internships and working in the entertainment industry. So, couple of the companies that I ended up working for include American Idol, Lionsgate, Stars, Discovery Channel. And then as soon as I graduated, I decided to go work in the CA mailroom, the mailroom at Creative Artist Agency. And they kind of call that the Harvard Business School of Entertainment. If any of your listeners are familiar with Creative Artist Agency, it's one of the number one agencies in Hollywood, if not the world. I decided to go to law school in 2011, came out to California, came out to Malibu, started my entertainment career early. And in fact, when I moved to California, I didn't know a single person in the state of California. I got the phone number of my uncle's boss's wife's kid, who was an attorney for a major film studio and got me my first job in law school. So that's the degree of separation that I went to. I think I emailed like 100 studios my first year looking for a job and I got zero responses. But after I got my first job, my first internship in entertainment, working with American Idol and then with Lionsgate, it kind of opened the doors in terms of other companies that were willing to look at my resume and talk to this kid from Iowa who just moved to LA and was trying to break into the biz.
Yeah, and when you worked with American Idol, that was with the original judges. Was Simon Cowell around then?
Yeah, this was, this would have been 2011, 2012. So I want to say it was season 14, somewhere between season 12 and season 14. I think Philip was the winner that year that I worked. And so a lot of my job was a lot less sexy and glamorous. My job was to do billing and to essentially look and review the music licenses, the music contracts that the show signs with the record label, with the publishers, so that they have the rights to use and include the music in the show itself. So my job was very much, sifting through libraries and libraries of contracts, stemming back to the original creation of the show to say, hey, do we have this song licensed from Universal or Warner Chappell or wherever it is, and then making sure that they got paid on time.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And so you worked at Lionsgate. Did you, how was it working? Was that like at a studio lot or more of a building office at that time?
So Lionsgate has more of a building office. I've worked on a number of studio lots, and actually American Idol was on the CBS studio lot. And we filmed right next to The Price is Right and Wheel of Fortune. And that's down in on Fairfax in Los Angeles. I've worked for a number of different companies. Not all of them had a film lot or film studio. Disney and Marvel did. You know, a lot of the filming that's done nowadays is filmed on location. And that's kind of one of my favorite things to do, is to actually go out and visit production wherever they're filming, especially if it's in a fancy foreign international location. And maybe I can go stay and get a day in the hotel with the crew or something.
Wow, that sounds like the La Dolce Vita. And speaking of American Idol, I have to share this with you, because I was actually invited to American Idol. That's when Jennifer Lopez was a judge. And yeah, and I don't know, you know, I most of us by now, like, I think the audience knows that I do the hit podcast Enchanting Book Readings for Kids, and I write kids content. But my character, Jack the Bear in Golden Hair, he's a royal bear in the story. It's a classic fairy tale. And he was on the American Idol red carpet. And so he has a photo with American Idol in the background. And so he got to go on the red carpet of American Idol. That's my little tip.
That's very cool.
Was that sweet? They were very sweet of them, because I knew that I write kids' books. And they're like, you gotta bring Jack the Bear, and put him on the red carpet. And like, so, you know, when you stand in front and everyone's taking photos, I have like my little cartoon character, Jack the Bear. So, yeah, you know, there's some
that's
lovely.
Sweet.
Yeah. So that's a testament to like how beautiful American Idol is to, you know, people and inviting guests onto the set. So that's lovely. Our audience is going to probably, you know, want me to ask this. You went to Marvel Studios Disney. Can you share anything there that you can tell us about that and your work while you were there?
Yeah, you know, I can just, you know, talk about it a little bit macroly. At the time, they were going through some major changes because they were merging with Disney, and they were moving their office headquarters actually onto the Disney lot. So a lot of my time at Marvel Studios was kind of part of being integrated, or watching the team be integrated into the Disney family. And it's been really great to just kind of see how Marvel Studios has evolved and grown over time, and just become more and more vital to the Disney brand itself, and to the extent that, you know, Disney and Marvel are almost synonymous with one another now. You really can't divorce one brand from the other.
Yeah, and now Disney has their Disney Streaming Plus. And so even though that everyone's been like binge watching and streaming and watching, I'm so excited to see these big action special effects movies back in the theater. So, you know, I'm so excited, right? With your friends.
And I actually got to walk the red carpet for the Thor 2 premiere, Thor the Dark World. And so that was kind of my favorite part about working for Marvel Studios, is that even as a low-level employee, I got to go to one of the premieres and sit shoulder to shoulder, elbows to elbows with the stars of that particular film. So that was pretty cool.
You were with Thor. Amazing.
I
wouldn't call anyone low-level. I don't think you're low-level. I think that's just one guest that came on worked with Steven Spielberg, and he did this game. Well, you have to listen to that episode, but Steven Spielberg, the director, he told our audience that he's very much that everyone is part of the team, and he really likes everybody, no matter if you're like the PA or the craft service or the makeup or the costume or the lawyer, that everyone is a team and you work together, no matter if you're the star or the co-star or the atmosphere. So, you know, because everyone is creative, and I'm sure there's a story in every one of us, or an artist or a painter. But you do fabulous things, keeping them on their, you know, making sure all the legal things are done. So you have a very, very important job. And so, So you went to Creative Artist Agency, and a lot of people don't know that, like, you know, sometimes it's hard to get an internship, it's hard to get a job, it's hard to get a foot in the door. So you started in the mailroom. I, too, started in the mailroom. I worked for William Morris in the mailroom.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and all the guys, well, didn't like faxing and Xeroxing and all that kind of stuff. So that was one of my specialties in the mailroom.
Very cool.
Yeah. Did you have a specialty in the mailroom?
Yeah. You know, for me, I was quite a bit older than the rest of the people in the mailroom, just by the fact that I had gone to law school and a lot of the people that I was working with had come straight through to undergraduate. And because of my role or place within the agency, it was kind of my job to, for lack of a better word, supervise some of the junior agent assistants to turn in their bookings and billing slips on time. So my job was to kind of play bad cop in terms of monitoring all the other assistants to make sure that they were doing their job. So as always, the attorneys kind of playing the bad cop in the room and calling balls, fouls, and strikes as they see them.
Oh, wow. And so can you share with us some of your, then you started working, and because you managed day-to-day production legal on, you know, multiple TV series for Amazon Studios, do you want to share some of the shows and films that you worked on for our audience that's listening?
Yeah, so from 2016 to mid-late 2019, I was the day-to-day show attorney for a number of Amazon Studios original programming. So the two shows that people are most familiar with and have heard of are The Man in the High Castle and Transparent, which both went for 4 or 5 seasons on Amazon. And so when I started in 2016, you know, Amazon had just completed 2 original series. Some people may or may not remember them. They were called Alpha House with John Goodman. And then there was a second one called Betas, which was very much like a HBO Silicon Valley knockoff with tech startup geeks. Both were great shows, but neither of them reached the level of notoriety that Man in the High Castle and Transparent achieved. But within the first year, 2016, 2017, Amazon had released a number of hit TV shows between Red Oaks, Mozart in the Jungle, Hand of God, Patriot, and then one of the shows that I was most proud of that I worked on was The Romanoffs. The Romanoffs was an 8-episode standalone series, which was all written and directed by Matthew Weiner, who was the original creator of Mad Men, the hit AMC show. And it was actually really cool for me because my previous bosses and mentors at Lionsgate were the show attorneys for Mad Men back when Mad Men was on air. And it kind of felt like a passing of the torch sort of, if you will, to me, in that I got Matthew Weiner's next show after Mad Men, The Romanoffs, and I got to oversee and manage production legal for that.
Yeah,
it was so cool. And you know, the job itself, you know, anything that you see physically that appears in front of the camera that makes it to your home by way of the screen, all of that needs to have a contract. All of that is bought and paid for and invoiced in some way, shape, or form, whether it's the actors that are on screen, whether it's the set pieces, the costumes, the physical cameras that are filming, you know, all portions and pieces that end up living on your television screen, all of that has to have a contract. So it is vital between, you know, creative producers, physical producers, and business and legal affairs to constantly be in communication as producers are lining up locations and sets, as producers are lining up equipment rentals, vendors, guest appearances, nudity, simulated sex, violence, visual effects, these type of things, to be in contact with their attorney, to help them manage and oversee as kind of legal pie in the sky and make sure everyone's doing their job and everything's getting signed off on and checked off on okay.
So you have a heavy duty role of overseeing and making sure everyone's, you know, all the I's and T's are dotted. And, you know, it's a big role and it's a lot of work. So, I mean, for the creators and the attorneys to see how bright and smart and, you know, that you are to, and that you are managing this amazing TV show, which we all love, Mad Men. I mean, Jon Hamm, oh my God, that was the best. They were smoking in the costumes and the wardrobe and just the soap opera of it all in the story and how he was like, ah, look at him. He's with another girl. No. So, but yeah, Matthew Weiner, like you said, is an incredible creator. And you, so, and also then you also did a major production. Can you tell us about this $100 million World War II epic film that you worked on?
Yeah. So, you know, doing production legal for television isn't too dissimilar from doing production legal for major film or independent film or studio film, et cetera. Somewhere around 2017, 2018, Centropolis Roland Emmerich had managed to raise quite a bit of financing through independent financing out of China. I think they raised somewhere close to like $50 million or something to that effect, and had paired up with Lionsgate on the distribution to match that $50 million and put together this epic World War II film called Midway. It's a recreation of the Battle of Midway of World War II after Pearl Harbor. It was the U.S. Strike in retaliation to Pearl Harbor. And, you know, when we were filming this thing, it was really an independent production in that it was Roland Emmerich calling the shots, and him and his line producer UPM and creatives were very much, you know, hands-on and responsible for overseeing all aspects of the filmmaking, and between Roland's team, Lionsgate, and myself, I kind of served as the middle person to help oversee the contracts, help get people to film in Hawaii and Vancouver. We had a large ensemble cast of many, many stars between Woody Harrelson, Patrick Wilson, Ed Skrein, Mandy Moore, Nick Jonas, a lot of great actors. And my job, again, is to kind of sit in the middle and draw up all of the contracts to make sure that everyone is in place in time to perform their services in order to get the film made.
Well, anyone would feel confident that their TV and film is in good legal hands with Joshua Lastin. Joshua, we have a couple minutes. Where can people keep up with you or social media wise to see what you're working on?
Yeah. You know, I recently just launched my own solo private venture where I do private individual entertainment business affairs counseling. I work a lot with actors, writers, directors, producers, figuring it out what is their talent and how best to monetize. And then I also, you know, again, run and oversee production legal for film and television. And so my new business is called Lastin Impressions. It's just my last name, Lastin Impressions. And you can visit me or check me out on lastinimpressions.com. Otherwise, I have the regular social media websites, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can follow me at just HollywoodATTY.com. It's just at Hollywood ATTY. So Hollywood Attorney ATTY. Okay. At Hollywood ATTY.
At Hollywood ATTY. And Lastin Impressions. And your last name is LASTINE, Lastin Impressions. I really like that. Like the little play on words there. Well,
Josh, yeah, it's a little punny.
Yeah, this shows how smart and clever you are. And well, we are so happy to have you on the show today. I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Joshua.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It was really great being here and answering your questions. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Yeah, and thank you everyone for listening. Until next week, everyone stay healthy. And if you have supported the podcast, we wanted to say thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone. Cheers.